Today we begin our second year of preaching and teaching through the God story. And so for those of you who haven't been with us in the past year, last September when for 37 weeks we preached and we taught through the God story, I thought I would use a little time here for review. And for those of us who were with the God story last season, maybe it'll be a little reminder of what that was all about and rekindle some memories from the past. About 2.5 years ago, our church was chosen, one of 12 churches out of a group of 150 churches in North America, to participate in something called the Biblical Preaching Project. And it was a pretty great experience for several of us in this church. For some of you lay people who participated in the interviews and the interaction with some of the things we were talking about in that project, and for some of us ministers and church leaders who use that time to anew renew ourselves with what it might mean to preach and teach biblically. And there were some significant takeaway points, and so I'm just going to blitz through 6 takeaway points, and I hope this is refreshing for us. Point number 1, we learned that most pew-sitting Christians, you out there right at this moment in time, don't understand the big overarching story of God. That's what we learned, that when you hear these episodic sermons that preachers and teachers give you week after week, they might be nice and good lessons, but you don't really have this big arc of how this God story fits in with all these little stories along the way. True? I hope so, because I got lots more stuff I need to talk about here that depends on that. And so what ends up happening is we hear all these little bits and starts, and we end up having very compartmentalized lives, just like we have with Christian bits and bots that we get along the way. And so we have our Christian life, we have our work life, we have our school life, we have our leisure life, and all these things we just keep compartmentalized. And then perhaps we come to church on Sunday morning to fill up our church religious life. That was really nice. A nice lesson. That was good music. Nice people, or relatively nice people. And so we have this church life experience, but it really doesn't transform us or change us or animate us. And so we go back to our regular lives, and maybe sometimes we figure out how to fit in that church life into one of the other compartments, but most of the time we just leave that church life as a nice experience and then get on with our regular lives. Now, one of Reverend Jeremy's deep thoughts with our youth this past year kind of echoed a bit of that feel. He said, in North America, it can be pretty easy for us to live our lives as professing Christians, but at the same time be practicing atheists. Professing Christians, so self-describing earnestly that, yes, I'm a Christian, but in the practice of our life, we're atheists because we don't have to really depend on God in North America. If things go wrong, we can get medicated, or we can get therapy, or we can start a new diet, or get a better workout plan, and everything is going to be all right. And so this year, Rev Jeremy is going to keep on working with the youth and young adults to help them try to bridge that gap, where maybe what we do in our Christian life and our understanding of who God is actually invades and affects and spills out of every other part of our life. And so it's the same with us as the people of God. This is not just for the youth and young adults. So even as we get back to the God story, how can we gain an understanding of this big God-authored storyline that actually makes a difference in the way that we live moment to moment, hour to hour, day to day in the real world here in 2013? so that we might not be these Christians who, in the way that we shape and live our lives, really practice our lives like atheists. We don't need God. We don't need to rely on God. We're not animated by the Spirit of God. Point two. So that's where the God story approach comes in. We call it also the narrative lectionary. A 37-week move chronologically through the God story. And so when you come to church here for the next 30-odd weeks, you're not going to hear these spits and spots of random Bible stories that are your favorite minister's hobby horses. You're going to hear this chronological 37-week move from Genesis all the way to the beginning early church, the new people of God. And we talk about this big drama being five acts, A-C-T-S. Creation, fall, the second act. Israel, this big third act about the people of God. Jesus, the fourth act. And then the fifth and final act that we live out as the new people of God. So creation, fall, Israel, Jesus, and the NPOG, the new people of God. And so the hope is that as we preach and teach, that you will see and believe and encounter this God who is good, this God who is great, this God who's loving, this God who's always tipping the scales towards grace, a God who loves us all the way through, not bad God in the Old Testament, good God in the New Testament, but instead we go through this big story. And we see this God of love, this God of grace, this God of mercy, this God who companions with us all the way through. Now, not to say it's not a messy story. There's tons of mess and failure in the God story. But the overarching story should always be humming in the background. God is love. And we, the people of God, best do the God story when we do love. When we join God in God's great restoring work in the world that is at work even now as we worship together. So as we get this God story into our hearts and our minds and our imaginations, it might actually change the way we live. And even as we read other parts of the God story, we might know how it fits into the bigger God story. And so Becky Bonham is teaching a 9:30 class on Sunday mornings on the Book of Ruth. Started this week. We'll be doing that for 3 more weeks, 9:30 till 10:30. And so she's teaching on Ruth. And so if you understand the big arch of the God story, you say to yourself, oh, Ruth, that fits into chapter 3. Israel. Right. Ruth was in that story of Israel when God's people were trying to learn what it meant to be God's people, and they blew it lots of time, but there are all these little stories along the way where they sometimes got it right. And how can I understand the Ruth story to then understand God's bigger story and then actually have this animate my life? Point three. So we preachers are then going to preach the God story. But the work isn't all up to us. The other great thing we learned in the Biblical Preaching Project was that there is lots of great work for you hearers to do. That's you. You hearers have work to do. So we can preach and teach these great God story sermons, which we do week after week, I'll let you know. But it's not for you to just say, oh, that was a great sermon that Tana preached. Wow, that was nice. And just go along with your life. The work that you hearers are to do in the midst of this God story is to say, okay, that was a good sermon or that was a good story, but what am I to learn by living in the midst of that story, by dwelling in the world of that story? How am I actually to live this week? And so then this living story becomes this great movement from this place week after week. All 180 or 190 of you, week after week, saying, I've dwelt in the God story, I've lived in there, I've learned this Sunday, now how can I live that out and join God in God's great work that's happening in the world here and now? So it's not just ministry staff and church council people doing the work of the church each week. It's all of us, 200 people together, being the story of God. living these lives of blessing for those around us. So, does that sound too much like work? Well, point four, we can worship while we work. I was thinking about the seven dwarves. We can whistle while we work. We can worship while we work. We can learn the God story, put it into practice, and worship while we work, or something like that, right? So we get to worship and work at the same time. And so when we come back to church each week, it's not just to get this wagging finger and, oh, you need to be better Christians, everybody. No, you get to learn the greatness of this God story, the joys and the sorrows, the mess and mystery of this God story. So we worship together. We sing these hymns of faith, like even this morning, we're singing of creation. We're singing of God's grace. We're singing of God's renewal of all the earth. And we're going to read the beginning part of the Genesis story. And then that shapes us as God's people in the here and now. And so we take these themes of love and restoration and creation and providence and sustenance and care, and we take those into our being, and then we go out into the world and worship while we work. And if you've been hearing us talk about our vision statement over the past several months, we always talk about seeking the peace and well-being of the city, and that's always on your church bulletin. But we say the way that we do that and the way that we're inspired and enthused and animated to do that is that we listen to God's heart. And one of the great ways that we listen to God's heart is through the God story. And so as we listen to the God story, we allow God's story and the stories of God's people to then animate our lives. This is not a dead story. This is a story that's empowered by God, Yahweh, the protagonist who is always on the move, ahead of us, for us, behind us, beside us, with us, placing in us the same power that raised Jesus from the dead to be living power wherever we're called to week after week. Point five. Isn't it amazing how this whole story thing shows up in culture all over the place? I think that's why it's so exciting to be a Christian in North America right now, is that we have a God story to share with the nations. And more than ever, people are talking about story. I don't know for you, but I just feel like we learn from lots of places that we live storied lives. People saying that our lives are filled with a million stories. We are storied people. We live in a world of stories. Every day you tell 10, 20, 30, 100 stories, right? Even when someone says, how are you? You say, I am fine, or I am doing horrible. Isn't that just a mini story? And if the person gives a rip and is actually listening to your response, they might say, oh, you're having a bad week? Well, tell me about that. And then you proceed to tell them a story. And so it's true that all of us live according to some kind of storyline. And who knows where you get your storyline from? Maybe it's from your favorite TV show. That's where you get your storyline. So when you live each day, you just kind of think you're like so-and-so on that your favorite show, and that's the life you lead. Or maybe you get your storyline from your neighbor. You try to keep up with your neighbor. Oh, they just bought such and such. I need to get such and such. Oh, they just went to Mexico. I'm going to go online and book a trip to Mexico. Or maybe you have a family narrative, a family storyline, and that's what you live out. Or maybe you have your Facebook narrative, right? It seems like everyone's got this fabulous life on Facebook, and I'm seeing all the pictures of it. Isn't that awesome? But that's your storyline that you're living by. So the short story shows up in lots of places, and even in Christian culture it shows up. I was looking on my bookshelf, and I have books, The Story of the Christ. Not the life of Christ, but The Story of the Christ. The Story We Find Ourselves In, Further Adventures of a New Kind of Christian, Brian McLaren. This one simply called Story, subheading Recapture the Mystery. And you read through this and there's all these chapters, creation, harmony, mystery, signs, new wine. And so story, story, story. And I don't think that's just fluke. I think God's at work with story. And then no greater a time for us to talk about the Christian story than now. But we have one story to rule them all, the God story. And so that's what we'll talk about and try to engage with and interact with over the next 37 weeks. Because this story informs us about our identity, who we are. It informs us about community, how we live together as human beings, as the people of God. And it helps us interpret our lives. So point number 6, and this is the final point. Don't expect to get all this story stuff figured out really quick. I feel like as a Christian and a Christian leader, I've been kind of learning and wrestling with this God story stuff for the past 15 years. And when I first came to Regent Seminary and Cary Theological College and was working on doctoral studies, some of this stuff was coming from the seminary and the academy, and now, 15 years later, it seems to hit congregations. And so I hope this is just good food for conversation. Whether you agree with me or disagree with me, or whether you talk to other Christians and friends about that of, yeah, does this story thing work for you, or what? Or is it just confusing? We want to just try to get clarity on how this God story might actually invade our life story and change us and transform us as the people of God here at First Baptist Church for such a time as this. So today we enter into the story. And we enter in through Genesis, the first act of the God story, creation. I'm going to invite you to turn in your bulletins to the bottom right-hand corner, and we're going to just quickly read, I'll read it, but if you could follow this quote from Eugene Peterson. And as we're reading through that, I'm going to invite Karen up, and then we're going to then read through together this other insert that is found in your bulletin. So if we can just get prepped for this, this is what we're doing, reading the God story together. But I want to give this little intro from Peterson. So you have the intro there, you have this story section folder, and there's a part for you as the people of God to have this refrain as Karen and I are reading through the God story this morning. Now Peterson says, Genesis gets us off on the right foot. It pulls us into a sense of reality that is God-shaped and God-filled. It gives us a vocabulary for speaking accurately and comprehensively about our lives. Where we come from and where we're going, what we think and what we do, the people we live with and how to get along with them, the troubles we find ourselves in, and the blessings that keep arriving. We are given a succession of stories with named people, people who loved and quarreled, believed and doubted, had children and married, experienced sin and grace. If we pay attention, we find that we ourselves are living variations on these stories. Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Noah and his sons, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob, Rachel, Joseph, his brothers. The stories show clearly that we are never outsiders or spectators to anything in heaven and earth. God doesn't work impersonally from space. He works with us where we are as he finds us. No matter what we do, whether good or bad, we continue to be part of everything that God is doing. Nobody can drop out. There's no place to drop out to. So we may as well get started and take our place in the story at the beginning. Okay. The God story begins. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and earth, the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said,
"Let there be light."
And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said,
Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters.
So God made the dome and separated the waters that were under the dome from the waters that were above the dome. And it was so. God called the dome sky, and there was evening and there was morning the second day. And God said,
"Let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear."
And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas.
And
God saw that it was good. Then God said,
"Let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees of every kind on earth that bear fruit with the seeds in it."
And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed of every kind, and trees of every kind bearing fruit with the seed in it. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. And God said,
"Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for year, for days and year. And let them be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth."
And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night and the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. And God said,
"Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky."
So God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves of every kind with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying,
"Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth."
And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And God said,
"Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things, and wild animals of the earth of every kind."
And it was so. God made the wild animals of the earth of every kind, and the cattle of every kind, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said,
"Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth."
So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them,
"Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth."
God said,
"See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food."
And it was so. God saw everything that he had made,
and indeed it was very good.
And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all their multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Some simple closing comments for us. The beginning and enduring word from God for us since the beginning of time is, it is good. Now, things quickly fall apart in the God story. We'll get to that more next week. But we cannot forget that we as the human race, all of creation, have been created by a good God who's always holding us in good and loving hands. So will this truth, will this story change the way we live this week? Knowing and believing that we're in the hands of a good and loving God, what does this mean for us, for me and my identity, for us as the community of faith? Knowing that those around us, whether it's our closest friend or family member, or whether it's our most working against us enemy on the face of the earth, has been created in the image of God. And that we are all in the hands of this gracious and loving God. And that when we look into his or her face, we see the image of God. That other person, no matter who they are, is an image bearer of God to us. How might that change the way we live as God's people this week? This ought to be good news, even though it's complicated and messy news. This ought to be good news for us. And as we allow ourselves to frame our lives in this big arching God story this week and this semester, may we encounter love and grace and mercy. And may we become more of a people who exude and gush forth with God's love and God's grace and God's mercy, so that our God might be glorified, so that we might be those kind of people who usher in the kingdom and dream of God, as God wills here on earth as it is in heaven. Just want to give you 10 or 15 seconds to receive this creation story anew this week, to allow it to begin to change and transform your heart, even in these moments as we worship and work together. And then I'll close us with a word of prayer. I'm closing with a creation prayer. Gracious God, you created the world and sent your Son to live among us. Made of the same stuff, breathing the same air, marveling at sunrise and sunset just as we do. Help us to participate in the life around and within us as your life, as you living in us and we living in you. God of love and life, restore us to your peace. Renew us through your power and teach us to love all that you have created and to care for the earth as your gift and our home. We pray these things in the name of the community of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.